Good evening and welcome to Barclay and Barton on Love Sport. We're trawling through the archives to produce a post-war history on the great Manchester United, all the way from Busby and Murphy right through to the present day. It's me, Matt Beadle, joined by renowned but retired, I must say, sports journalist and documenter of many a past United manager with a series of autobiographies on his CV. Patrick Barclay, hello sir.
Hello.
And United historian and author Wayne Barton also joins us. Hello, Wayne.
Hello.
Into episode 3 now, Que Sera, Sera.
This is Love Sport.
Previously, chaps, we were talking about Tommy Doherty and, of course, the end of his time at Manchester United, his eventful 4.5 years or so. And July 1977, after the FA Cup final win, in walked Dave Sexton, Paddy.
Well, we spoke in a previous episode about Manchester United's habit of choosing the opposite of the manager they've just sacked. Well, after Tommy Doherty came Dave Sexton, who, very dignified, reticent, a very devout Catholic, a man who lived well and kept fit, and also was intelligent enough to follow the Jesuit scholar Teilhard de Chardin, who, of course, we'll be all fully conversant with.
Absolutely.
And liked poetry. Anyway, that's Dave Sexton for you. Also a former Chelsea manager, and one whose abilities were immediately cast out upon by Doherty, who had succeeded. Dave had succeeded Doherty at Chelsea. And he said, "Dave's not a coach, he's a hearse." And so that was a good start. But no, Dave wouldn't have minded that kind of stuff. It would be water off a duck's back. And he started off very well. I mean, I described his overall reign as an era of diminishing excitement. And it did start well. He, you know, made Manchester United type signings. He went to Leeds United, and that must have been popular because he went to Leeds United and stripped them of their two best players, the Scotsman Gordon McQueen and Joe Jordan. And
on those two players, there's the this popular idea that they almost represent a change in style in playing United, in that they were more abrupt,
yes,
and aggressive, and I don't think that's entirely fair.
No.
I think Gordon McQueen was very classy defender,
yeah.
And Joe Jordan, if he was physical, and he certainly was, but United needed that.
Yes.
So,
yeah, exactly. Both good players. I mean, they cost a lot of money. I mean, they were the total fee of £850,000. You know, which was a lot of money in those days. Yeah, they were. I don't remember many people at the time casting doubt over the signings, and indeed retrospectively, saying that those players did not prove themselves Manchester United players. They both did, with knobs on. He also signed Mickey Thomas to replace Gordon Hill, left-sided midfield player for flamboyant winger, and that was, in retrospect, that was a bit more Dave. The football, as I said, diminishing excitement. He followed up again in the transfer market, again by buying a super player, Ray Wilkins, £825,000. And again, people wouldn't say, well, despite Ron Atkinson's crab joke, nobody would say that Ray Wilkins wasn't a Manchester United player. So that was fine. But it was just the style of play that all began to grate with United fans. It wasn't as free-flowing. Could it have been as free-flowing as under Tommy Doherty?
I think the thing about Sexton as opposed to Doherty is that Sexton was a lot more studious, and he strongly believed in instruction, where Doherty and Atkinson afterwards, they trusted the players to express themselves and to have their own instinct. Sexton wanted them to think about every possible scenario. So it will sound familiar to modern day fans, but he had Gordon Hill watching videos of the great Hungarian wingers because of their work rate. And Gordon Hill was the top scorer at the club at the time, and he was still playing from the left wing.
Which, by the way, still kind of way ahead of its time when you think of all the analysis that goes on nowadays.
Sexton was ahead of his time. He was a brilliant coach.
Yes, he was.
He was rated... I spoke to Ron Atkinson recently about this, and he still ranks Dave Sexton as the best coach that he ever saw. Yeah. So that tells you the esteem.
Roy Hodgson would definitely rate, you know, anybody who worked with Dave Sexton.
Yeah.
Or had the privilege to sort of study his work, would say exactly the same.
The issue I think that Dave Sexton found was that when he worked before at Chelsea, he was working with young players, and at QPR, they'd done so well under Gordon Jago, resigned in a matter of principle. So that was a squad that he'd inherited that were on the rise, but they were really receptive to his ideas because of the reputation that he had.
They got them to second place in the league.
Absolutely. And a lot of that was... I'm not devaluing the credit for Sexton with that. I'm not saying it was Jago, but Sexton deserved all the credit and he'd improved that squad. And he came into a very rare situation at United where that squad was in the rise. It was on the ascendancy as well. So no managers get that, do they? You know, a manager gets sacked because of underperformance. So he was fortunate in that respect. But where these players have been coached to trust in their own instinct, and they were very good at it, and they were believing that they could achieve the best things in the game, suddenly they were being told to do the basics. And that's very frustrating for players like Gordon Hill or Brian Greenough, players who knew how to express themselves. They didn't understand why they needed to be told the basics. And there's a very important distinction to make with this, because people just believe that Sexton was, he's a dour football man, and that he wasn't a fan of attacking football. He just wanted it to be pragmatic. He wanted it to be attacking football. He just wanted the players to understand the defensive side of it and to the pragmatic side. He wanted the players to understand that. And it was more textbook in that approach. And that was a big difference between him and Doherty, and it was abrasive to those players. The players, it didn't fit in there for whatever reason, and his lack of signings, he trusted in the squad that he had. I think he waited a little bit, trusting in his ability to coach that squad, which worked for a little while, but the wafer thin standard of that squad meant as soon as injuries came to the likes of Martin Buchan and Jimmy Greenough and Brian Greenough, then they did suffer a bit of an injury crisis in the first autumn where he was in charge. They dropped a lot of points. They were heavily beaten on a few occasions. So it looked like it was going backwards for Dave. And then in the April of his first season, when Gordon was top scorer on Gordon Hill's birthday, he sold him to Derby County. In the meantime, it should be said, Tommy Doherty wasn't being the kindest of former managers to sort of vacate his seat. He was making the digs at Sexton and trying to justify his performance. He wasn't doing very well at Derby County, where he'd gone to as manager, but he was trying to justify, look how badly United are doing now, and that I would have done much better. He constantly tried to sign players off them, and he was successful with Gordon Hill.
He was probably right, and Dave's, although I think United finished second in Dave's first season, the crowds began to dwindle after that in the succeeding seasons. And really, the fans got him sacked. I mean, Martin Edwards, who by then had taken over from his dad as chairman, wanted, you know, it was not, didn't like sacking people. And he liked Dave. You know, anyone who met Dave, you could not like Dave. I mean, he was a real man. You know, he was a very pleasant character. But he couldn't ignore the huge gaps on the terracing. People just wouldn't go to watch the football, and the crowds fell off, I mean, in a way that probably couldn't happen today. During the... people were moaning about the football in the Moyes and especially Van Gaal's era, but there was still the same crowd turned up every week.
Yeah.
In those days, crowds were much more fickle, active, not so wealthy. And basically, you could see how unpopular Dave was, because you could see the concrete. And eventually that was why Dave was sacked. Not because he was sacked after seven consecutive victories. Incredible. at the end of the season. But the more important statistic was that the average crowd had gone down by 20%.
I guess you are judged by your signings to an extent as well. And you mentioned McQueen and Jordan and Ray Wilkins who all performed well.
We haven't mentioned Nicky Jovanovic, who was United's first foreign signing. People say it was Carlo Sartori. But I mean, if you've ever speaking to Sir Carlo Sartori, he might have been born in Italy, but he sounded like a Manc to me. But, the Nicky Jovanovic came from, I think, Red Star Belgrade, looked a fabulous physique for a centre-half, could play, good feet, but he had back trouble and he was a bit of a joke. In fact, the jokes were running around about somebody said about the football, Dave's idea of adventure is to have an after 8 minute at 7:45. I mean, all these jokes. I mean,
that was a Ducky special.
And when he signed Gary Birtles, you know, everybody makes mistakes, and this is not a fit subject for humour. There were quite a few hostage dramas around that time, and there was a joke about the hostage who's released after 18 months, and says, "Has Birtles scored yet?" Mm. I mean, it just became a joke, and at the end of, I think, the 80-81 season, Dave was put out of his misery.
The players as well were becoming less receptive. I mean, from the very early days, like I said, they were a little bit resistant to his, let's call it, overcoaching at the side of Docherty. On more than one occasion, Sexton would be ordering them to go through drills, and the repetition of it was relentless. He was getting, there's one particular occasion where they were doing it with crosses, and one of the players quipped, "Well, why don't we try the one where he crosses it and it goes on my head and it goes in the net?" And what actually happened in that training session, they contrived to make it work just to get off the pitch, which defeats the purpose of the object. You know, they actually made it happen just so they could get off the training pitch. So they weren't really learning what they should have been learning. I think as they were more established players, and to be fair, I've always made this point about United's age of that squad. It was so young. It was comparative to the 96 Cup final, the fledgling side. It was very young. Yeah. They should have been more receptive to Sexton's coaching, and who knows where that could have led. It's probably telling which players were more receptive. Martin Buchan liked Dave Sexton. Steve Coppell liked Dave Sexton. The most studious players kind of got what he was buying into, but the likes of Gordon Hill, who he thought he was, you know, teaching Granny to suck eggs, he wasn't having it. They just weren't receptive to it. And Sexton, to his discredit, I guess, didn't compromise on that. He didn't think Hill's a special talent that could be accommodated. Hill's a liability that needs to be gone. And those kind of miscalculations. There was he didn't like confrontation as well. Apparently there was periods where he wouldn't be completely up front with the players. Brian Greenough got very upset with him a few times about being dropped and being stripped of the vice captaincy. And also, I think, in a respect, he was too nice to be manager of Manchester United. After the 79 Cup final, in which United came back from two goals in the last 10 minutes, only to lose it in the last minute, he came out afterwards, he stood on the pitch, and he said it was a pleasure to have been involved in a game of football, which is very magnanimous, absolutely brilliant of any manager of any football club. Showed the class of the man. But you can't imagine a Manchester United manager saying it was a pleasure to be involved in a game like that. It just wasn't right. And for whatever reason, the crowd started to dwindle. I think the players become less and less receptive to his methods. And he started to get, which he's always not very pleasant, but he started to get personal abuse from some of the terraces, even women. Where I remember it was being commented in newspaper articles that women were hurling abuse at him, which wasn't great. And I always remember Ron Atkinson saying that if it hadn't been such a mark of disrespect to the man, he would have offered Sexton the role as his assistant or youth coach at the club. Yeah. And I can't help but think...
Oh, that's interesting.
I can't help but think that Sexton as assistant manager or youth coach at United would have been a runaway success.
Yeah.
And when you look at some of the youth players that came through, in the few years after Sexton, I think that speaks volumes.
That's interesting.
This is Love Sport.
This is Barkley and Barton on Manchester United, a post-war history of Manchester United here on Love Sport. Episode 3 you're listening to right now, Que Sera, Sera. And we are now into the summer of 1981 when a guy who I don't want to describe in too much detail because I've seen interviews with him since and I'm sure both you two can vouch for this, that he doesn't take kindly to be given a certain tag that he's often given with regards to gold chains and champagne and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
But Paddy, he came in 1981 and he wasn't the first, not the second, nor the third choice for Manchester United.
No, they went first for... The feeling was after Dave Sexton had appeared to sort of shrink a little in the job, rightly or wrongly, that was the perception from outside. So they wanted a larger, a big, charismatic character. So they went for Southampton's Laurie McMenemy, who had, of course, masterminded United's defeat by a second division club in the 1976 Cup final. It didn't seem a bad shout. He was doing very well with Southampton. He'd proved that he could handle top stars like Keegan, Mickey Shannon. Manchester United obviously aspired to that. In fact, according to his own account, Laurie was tested out at a function by Busby. Busby's still influential at that club. And
Martin Edwards vouches for that. Yeah, I always thought it was a response to sacking, but Martin Edwards told me it was on the record because it's in the book. But he said that they'd got a yes from McMenemy before they dismissed Sexton.
Is that so? Well, McMenemy just tells the story. McMenemy came to United to do some kind of social function and gave a speech. Matt approaches him afterwards in a quiet corridor with a brown paper parcel. And he says, "What's this?" He says, it's your expenses, son." And inside it, he peeled back, and inside it was a load of ready money. You know, £20, £10 notes or whatever they were. Now, at that time, there were a lot of reports of, you know, underhand brown paper parcels going the rounds in football, with managers in particular being involved. Laurie McMenemy said, "Oh, thank you, Sir Matt, but I don't require any expenses," and very firmly gave the money back to him. And he was convinced that he was being tested by Matt. But it may well be that he'd been sounded out before. At any rate, he decided not to. Two others decided not to. Sir Bobby Robson, and Ron Saunders, who had won the title with Aston Villa, 79-80. And was a disciplinarian, but obviously incredibly successful team builder. They both turned it down because it was a bed of nails, basically. Same reason as you know, too much of a career risk, because people fail at United. They all have done. They've been all, you know, O'Farrell, you know, McGuinness, Sexton, even, you know, in extraordinary circumstances, Tommy Doherty and so on. They just didn't fancy. They thought it was too hard a job to risk. So they turned it down. So United went for number four on their list, Ron Atkinson. Now, Ron had not got trophies to his name, but he was overseeing fantastic Manchester United-style football at West Bromwich Albion. And correct me if I'm wrong, lads, but I think they'd played about 18 months earlier one of the classic Old Trafford matches.
5-3.
I remember Cyril Regis, the late Cyril absolutely. Regis was magnificent, as indeed
Laurie Cunningham was.
Both sides were. And Laurie Cunningham, yes. I mean, it was a wonderful West Brom team. Brendan Batson, Ali Brown, Ali Robertson, Tony Brown, Mancunian midfield, attacking, goal-scoring midfield player. I mean, they had class in every position, and they really showed it that day. And, you know, it seemed that he made sense. And within 6 months, I remember Martin Edwards saying, you know, he was fourth choice, but I think we hit lucky. I think we got the best man. He and Manchester United did really seem like a very good fit. And to be quite honest, to this day, still do.
he was. I think that was a symbolic moment in United's history in going for Atkinson, and identifying the personality shift between Sexton and a more charismatic, outspoken person like Atkinson. Because I think what that was saying is that will forever be the case now. In order to succeed at United, you're going to need to have a certain amount of character. You're going to need to be able to be this guy in front of the press, this front figure for the club, this spokesperson, this representative. And like I said earlier, you know, Edwards was a big fan of Tommy Docherty, so it was reluctantly that was done. So I think he wanted that kind of character. And he was. I mean, the things what Edwards didn't realise about Atkinson at the time was how similar he was to Docherty in his footballing education. I mentioned Jimmy Hogan a few times, but they believed in
that. I'm sure it's not the last one, by the way.
I think this
you
one
really
is...
You really love him, don't you?
This one may be the last one on it.
But no, rightly.
Cut me down to size with that one. But Atkinson was a youth player at Aston Villa at the time of the Busby Babes, and he was being taught by Hogan at Villa. And Atkinson, because he'd been taught in the same way. Now, Sexton believed in that same style of football because he was a big fan of Mikkels and everything like that. But Ajax, they really did believe in that sort of educating people. And Sexton thought that's these textbook stuff, so that's what he went away with. Whereas Atkinson, like Docherty, was more inclined to trust the player's instincts.
Join in the five-a-sides.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Be the star of the five-a-sides, in Atkinson's case. Get the hump if he didn't win.
And the thing is that, you know, an awful lot of relating to football players is wit, isn't it?
Yeah.
And Atkinson, I think, was probably one of the sharpest guys that I ever met in football. You know, he's up there with Docherty as a wisecracker.
Yeah,
he would certainly think he'd be one of the sharpest guys in football. And they were quite similar, those two, in that sense. I mean, even at his interview with Martin Edwards, you know, he said, "What about a company car?" And this is another one that's been told about other people, but this definitely took place. He was asked about a company car. And Martin, you know, thinking he could pinch a couple of pennies, said, "Yeah, well, Dave had a Rover." And Atkinson says, "Listen, I don't want a dog, I want a car." And he got a Mercedes.
And I mean, that's the kind of attitude that seeps through. It was more about, for Atkinson, not more about, but it was as much about presentation and who you were representing. And the phrase that I've heard so many times over the years by players of that generation is, you know, "We were at Manchester United, we didn't need to be told how to do the basics," which was a big shift, because Atkinson was saying, "I can trust you guys, you know what you're doing, express yourself and go out there." And there was nothing greatly philosophical about what he was putting across to them, in the same way that there wasn't with Docherty. But his eye for detail in terms of the opponents that United would be playing against was very good, because, you know, he'd often be telling defenders which way to mark the attackers and things like that. So that side of it was underrated. In terms of adopting that personality as a caricature, in a certain way, as he was, you lose some of the respect that comes with being a coach like Dave Sexton. People don't look at you in the same way. Atkinson wasn't bothered about that. He was bothered about winning. I asked him recently what was more important to you, entertaining or winning, and he said winning. Which sort of says everything about him. When you think that, you always assume that it would be entertaining football, but no, he'd make no mistake, he wanted to win, and he had that desire to win, and United needed that as well.
Mm. And also, quite early in his time at Old Trafford, he was bold. And again, Busby tangentially comes into this story. He broke the British transfer record, as Busby had done for Dennis Law all those years ago. He went back to, shamelessly plundered his old club, West Bromwich, for their star player, for Brian Robson, £1.5 million, which smashed the British transfer record. Signing with him was Remy Moses, who was a Nobby Styles player, a destroyer who could play a bit, but was very happy to just win the ball and give it to someone who's maybe just even slightly better, which Brian Robson obviously was. Brian Robson could do absolutely everything as long as you didn't ask him to do it with his right foot. And he was just a magnificent player. And so 1.5 didn't seem outrageous to us at the time, but it was too much for Matt. And Matt cited personal reasons. His wife Jean was ailing by now. And he cited personal reasons for stepping down from the board. But certainly Martin Edwards and others were convinced that he took a look at that 1.5 transfer and thought, shook his head and thought, the world's gone mad. And no one's worth that. And this game's not for me anymore. And he ceased to be a Man United director.
Hey, you pay for quality. He's gold dust.
But even at a time when clubs are struggling, you think it's worth paying that sort of money, do you think?
Hey, listen, I've just said to you earlier, if we get the lad, we get the best. And, you know, you have to pay for the best, you know.
Are you a happy man tonight?
Be a lot happier when I see him put a red shirt on and play for us.
This is Love Sport.
This is Barclay and Barton here on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, with Paddy Barclay and Wayne Barton. We are focusing on the Ron Atkinson era at Manchester United. Now, Wayne, the success, like you have already said, wasn't instant, but two cup finals in 83, won one, lost one, suggested that maybe more was to come.
Yeah, it was a gradual transition for United, considering where they were in 77, and Sexton had tried to make changes to that squad that weren't ultimately successful, and then you bring in a new manager, and he's got his own ideas. Like Paddy said earlier, Atkinson brought in Robson and Moses into midfield, which was immediately much more physical. He brought in Stapleton up front, which he was a more cultured centre-forward than what Joe Jordan was. Joe Jordan obviously left as well. Mickey Thomas left because he was struggling to deal with the pressure of playing for United. And a couple of other changes were made as well. The gradual transition you were making at that time, a lot of players who were 23, 24 are now either moving on or coming towards the end. Martin Buchan was coming towards the end, so Kevin Moran was being brought in. You had Sammy McElroy, who left around the same time as Brian Robson came in. In fact, he infamously scored a hat-trick on the day that Robson signed, but he was soon out. So there were a lot of players like that. You know, the players that you would have thought could have succeeded at United and won a league title or a European Cup, but they were now at the end of their careers and had to be moved on. Not in terms of the way that Hill was cut out.
Did you not feel that sort of mitigating factor was that the youth began to produce again? I mean, the most obvious one would be Norman Whiteside, obviously the standout one to come through the youth section, but also Mick Duxbury, international player, Arthur Alberston, ditto, Kevin Moran, ditto. You know, they were producing their own players, and I don't need to tell you boys that people want that from a Manchester United team, don't they?
And that was one of the great things that was a legacy of Sexton, which is underrated, because he was largely instrumental in all those.
You mentioned that in a previous episode, that he revived, or under him, the youth.
He was responsible for bringing in the coaches, and he did oversee all that transition. And yeah, like I said, I think if he had worked more closely with them, you might have seen even greater fruits. But certainly at that time, United brought through they were very prolific. Mark Hughes was in that same side as well.
Of course, yeah.
And it says everything about, and what we were saying about the gradual transition of these players and the expectation that was on them in that period of history. Norman Whiteside was in the side in the first team at 16, whereas Mark Hughes still needed another couple of years.
Yeah.
And I remember Ron Atkinson looking at him and saying, I don't think he'll ever make a player.
Yeah.
About Mark Hughes, and then obviously he did.
He didn't come onto the scene with the dramatic effect of Whiteside. No, I remember that. I remember thinking, you can see that a lot there, but we remembered Andy Ritchie, you know, instant impact. Do you remember Andy Ritchie? And you wondered about his pace?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just ridiculous now. He's one of the great centre forwards, you know. But you weren't sure about him, but he just needed that couple of years. I mean, Whiteside was a world name at 16.
Yeah, and he broke in 82, didn't he? Because he went to the World Cup, he really made his statement in that 82-83 season. Around that time as well, because he was managing that transition, Atkinson was trying and failing different transfer strategies. He really wanted Arnold Muren and Alan Brazil of Ipswich to work in tandem. He dearly wanted Brazil. He got Muren, but he couldn't get Brazil until later on, by which time Muren was coming towards the end, and the effectiveness of that partnership was no longer what it would have been if it had got them at the right time. So there are little things like that that weren't quite working, but what was working was this cultured style of play that Adam, which was the benefit of another legacy of Sexton, the players like Wilkins and the players like, I'd say Muren was a very much a Sexton style player. He would have loved him in the side, but yeah. But Atkinson had him. And United were playing a very good cultured style of play and very physical as well, which came in the likes of, you know, Robson.
Robson set that tone, yeah. But then he bought Gordon Strachan from Aberdeen.
Yep.
Of whom we will hear more, I'm sure. And Jesper Olsen.
Yeah.
Little, exciting technicians, basically. Yeah. Which kind of underlined the theme of, and maybe diluted that physical power a little bit.
Yeah, perhaps. I think the big thing for Atkinson, because those two came in the summer of 84.
Yes.
So he had the cup success in 83, which everyone expected them to beat Brighton, don't get me wrong. But there was the suggestion that they were going to go on to bigger and better things. And they could, for me, the biggest... I know they went on to have that infamous run where they won the first 10 games in 85.
Yeah, 85,
but
6, yeah.
Their biggest chance of winning the league...
Nobody saw them because it was a... Yeah, the TV blackout. Yeah.
But the biggest time, the biggest opportunity to win the league, as far as I consider it, was probably around March 84. So they played Arsenal and defeated them 4-0. Mm-hmm. Everything was going great. And then they played Barcelona in the midweek. They went top of the Division 1 with that victory. And then they defeated Barcelona in that infamous game in the Cup Winners' Cup, where Robson was outstanding and one of the best performances of all time and one of the best atmospheres as well.
A goal! Robson right on the line. Exactly halfway through the first half, and indeed Barcelona were uncertain in the air. Wilkins and a routine travel, Robson! Night like this, really, you must ask, how dare Manchester United consider selling this man? Ron Atkinson said before the game that a win tonight would be the most satisfying of his managerial career, and his players have responded in superb style. And now, on the Stretford end, they can celebrate their through to the semi-finals of the Cup Winners' Cup.
So it seemed like everything, we were on the edge of glory, but then Robson picked up an injury, Muren picked up an injury, two massive blows for United, and the season just spiralled out of control for that, towards the end of that season. Because Muren was coming towards the end, and United had such difficult, they had tragedy on that right-hand side, because Steve Coppell had to retire early for the injury. Alan Davies came in.
Playing for England, wasn't
it? Was cursed, that right-hand side, for United for years, because they had Coppell, they had Alan Davies, who sadly no longer with us, Laurie Cunningham, who's no longer with us. Those players he tried to bring in and make a change, and he couldn't get any solidity on that right-hand side until the summer of 84, when, like Paddy says, he brought in Gordon Strachan and brought in Jesper on the left.
So those nights in particular that you mentioned there, those results, especially that one against Barcelona, I know you've spoken about this before as well, Wayne, is that this is what kind of underlines Atkinson's legacy, I suppose, at United as well, in the sense of great, emphatic European nights, you know, the two FA Cups that you talk about, but just tailing off in the league at the same time. Yeah. But does, for example, Paddy, does that outweigh success constantly if you're getting these wonderful moments year on year?
Obviously it wasn't enough for Manchester United. It's very, very fondly remembered. I've been to a couple of functions run by the Association of Former Manchester United Players, a wonderful organisation, very vibrant, huge. They have huge dinners. And at one, I remember Ron spoke, and the ovation from the real Man United fans and players was rapturous. And so, you know, I think he's recognised. But at the time, it wasn't enough. And it seemed... you know, if you win the first, how many, 10 games of the season, you expect at least to be in the top two. And United weren't that year. I can't remember who won the league that year. 85-6. Of course, it was the double, the Liverpool double under Dalgleish. But, you know, that sort of summed up, well, if this flamboyance isn't really doing it, isn't going to win us the league back, and we better make a change now.
So one of the things that Ron said to me about his appointment at United and what he wanted to do was he wanted to re-establish United as a European force. That was one of his principal objectives. And I think it's safe to say that he did that because we defeated Barcelona. A great run in that competition. It was very unfortunate to get knocked out by Juventus in that competition as well. Yeah. Barcelona
featuring Diego Maradona, by the way.
Absolutely. And
probably the best player ever to set foot on Old Trafford. Oh, is that controversial?
Oh, a little bit.
I don't know about you. For me, after Brian Robson.
I'm sure it'll be some votes for Duncan Edwards and George Best.
Well, Robson certainly had the better of him that night.
He certainly did, yeah.
And I think that was another thing about Brian Robson as well. He was at his peak in that so like 84 to 86 period where he was basically, you put him on the pitch and he'd be the best player wherever he was. And he was unplayable in that run. I think at that time, Atkinson, and this was telling to do with the composition of the squad, you know, like I was saying, he brought in Strachan and he brought in Olsen. But at that time, because there was no width, he played Robson at the top of a diamond. Mm. And Robson was in electric form. He was scoring goals. He was basically playing as the best player in Europe. He was outstanding. And then he got injured. And United, you know, they faltered and didn't recover from that in that season. Obviously, Martin Edwards was sufficiently impressed to say, we'll go again and I'll back you in the summer. He signed Olsen, Strachan, Alan Brazil. He finally got Alan Brazil. Unfortunately, this was an Alan Brazil who had a chronic back problem. And I think it might have even been in the first 6 months of him being at Old Trafford. The trainer went to Ryan Atkinson and said, you need to sell him quickly because his value is going to plummet. Yeah. And I think that was Brazil's often derided as a flop in the same sentence as Bertels, but I think that's desperately unfair because he was obviously identified as part of a strategy that Atkinson wanted. Yes. He didn't get it with Muren, but he obviously dearly wanted Brazil, so he got him anyway. Mm. But he couldn't play in that system where Olsen and Strachan were bombing down the wings. By that time, Mark Hughes had emerged onto the scene.
Yeah.
The timing was all off for Brazil, and he didn't fit in, but United from 84 going forward, they had an unbelievable team, which was at that point it was almost identical in terms of style to Doherty's side, apart from the physicality in the middle of the park. They had all the flair up front and down the wings, and they had this physical presence in the middle of the park. They were brilliant at that, and that's why for you know youngsters of our era, Matt, they've so fondly remembered in the same way that people remember the Doherty side.
This is Love Sport.
Strachan in the middle. Olsen up as well. The goal! Right side! That's incredible!
This is Barkley and Barton on Love Sport, a post-war history of Manchester United. Gents, I have to say, we are edging ever nearer to November 1986. But before we get there is still the end of Ron Atkinson's reign to discuss. Wayne, we're going to start with 1985 and that FA Cup win over Everton.
Yeah, Ron explains, or he describes that as the best game of his United tenure. And that's a lofty statement considering Barcelona, like we've already talked about. At the time, and Paddy, you'll remember it with a clearer memory than I, I'm sure, although I've watched it many times, but at the time it was regarded as the best FA Cup final ever in terms of the way that it was won, because Everton had won the Cup Winners' Cup, the Division One trophy. They were coming into their own version of the treble. They'd absolutely annihilated United 5-0. In the autumn of that season, they'd taken United apart.
It was a fantastic team under Howard Kendall.
And on that day, it was very even, and United had the man sent off, and yet still contrived to win it.
That was Kevin Moran.
Yeah,
for a foul on Peter Reid.
Which, you know, they thought in the day it looks like it was. Today it's a red card. Yeah. On the day they didn't think it was, but and then it was won obviously in tremendous style as well. So and against
Norman Whiteside goal,
yeah,
and a ball from we spoke about Mark Hughes, a wonderful ball with the outside of his boot.
Yeah. Oh, typical
and a great arched run.
Typical
from
Mark Hughes pass. It was. I mean, I still maintain, and I'm running ahead of myself that his best ever pass for Manchester United was the one that didn't save Alex Ferguson's job at Nottingham Forest. But what a pass
absolutely.
That was.
No one ever talks about that, do they?
It went out, tempted the goalkeeper, came out again, and Mark Robins scored it, and good luck to him. But I think you and I would have had a chance of scoring that. The pass was so good. But, we digress. The Mark Hughes' pass, Norman Whiteside, he's got, in my opinion, the best goalkeeper in England to beat. A real goal filler, Neville Southall. So what does he do? He bends it round the dive. Out, back in. I mean, absolutely majestic skill from start to finish, the whole thing. I mean, you lads probably rate it a better cup final. It was a good cup. It was a tremendous cup final. But us neutrals have seen others. But
it was, name them.
Well, the Manchester United against the Arsenal weren't bad, was it? But you're not
mentioning
that.
According to Dave Sexton.
You're not mentioning that one. That was a tremendous game between, as you say, because Manchester United beat a very, very good side. A side that but for the Hazel disaster, or atrocity, depending on how you see it, would have troubled the very best in Europe.
So then we fast forward to the start of the following season. Everything's looking good when 10 wins on the bounce, as we said, and then the wheels came off.
Yeah, it's important to say, well, like Paddy mentioned, the blackout earlier. And Ron actually says that United didn't play that well in that period. It was a matter of holding it together. There were some good performances in, but not as... It's one of those that has been romanticised because of the blackout, the fact that people can't go back and watch it, apart from the grainy CCTV that's on YouTube of those games. But United, they did start very well, and you know, obviously from that position, they should have gone on to win the league because of the results. The whole thing wasn't swimmingly going as Atkinson had wanted it to. He needed another defender, and they were paper thin at the back. He wanted to sign Terry Butcher, but couldn't get him, and United wouldn't sanction the deal. And he eventually brought in Mark Higgins, who was a retired defender. He brought him out. Yeah. He'd retired, received his payout from the insurance.
Yeah,
and
had back trouble as well.
Yeah, and United had to pay the insurance to get him into side. Now, the point of why I'm bringing that, I'm not getting on Mark Higgins' back. I wouldn't want to if he's got back injuries.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he was very good and very highly rated defender, but he was suffering with his injury.
Yeah.
And the issue with that, as it pertains to the United squad, is that was typical of the signing that Atkinson would be making. He'd be making short-term signings of senior players to come in when United had a philosophy of bringing in younger players to do that job. Now, how that affected the morale of the senior players was you had the likes of Mike Duxbury, who, let's say, his nose was immediately put out of joint when Atkinson walked in the door because he brought in John Gidman with him, and then he brought in Siverbeck later on. So, and Siverbeck particularly was one of those out of the short-term signing draws, you know, those kind of signings. You had like Terry Gibson and Garth Crooks who were brought in. The idea behind it was sound, I guess. He wanted to see if they could handle life at Old Trafford without a major financial commitment, and then take a chance on them later on. But he was alienating the senior members of the squad, who were thinking, well, I could have done that job for two or three games. Then on top of that, you had the drinking culture, which is massively. It's a massive bone of contention in United's history. I mean, the players are still divided over that. You have some who say that Robson could sink 8 pints on a Friday and still be the best on a Saturday, which is probably true, but the counter-argument is, how good would he have been without the 8 pints?
Yeah. And how influential was his training regime in the number of injuries he got?
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that the drinking culture was an English football culture. It wasn't a Manchester United one. And the
Man
other...
United had some pretty good exponents.
Oh yeah, they.
I mean, we haven't mentioned Paul McGrath, but what a wonderful player!
Yeah,
but he was undergoing. He had huge, you know, off the field problems, and yet, you know, magnificent player either in midfield or centre half. Norman Whiteside, you know, we mentioned his match winning role, but you know he didn't mind a pint either, and so there was. That was certainly part of it. Whether it was the reason they didn't get anywhere near the title that season.
Same was that they were the only team that could finish fourth in a two-horse race.
Absolutely brilliant. They did, yeah.
And they were, I mean, if you talk to some of the players, apart from the drinking, Clayton Blackmore would say the pitchers, and he's probably got a point, it's like United in the early season on the good pitches were playing brilliantly, and as soon as the injuries and the bad pitches came in, they played terribly, and then they dropped a lot of points. Difficult for them to recover when all of those circumstances were in play. You had the senior players. Also, some of the senior players didn't really get on with Mick Brown, the coach, the assistant, and there was a lack of discipline there. They were often on the trips, and they took a lot of trips away. Mick Brown would often be the butt of the jokes, which leads to its own indiscipline, the injuries. And I think all of those things came to head for Atkinson. He actually offered his resignation at the end of that season to Martin Edwards, who told him to give it another go.
That was when he'd read in the papers that they were after Terry Venables, wasn't it?
Yeah, of course, the departure as well of Mark Hughes to Barcelona potentially played a part in that. And we talked about signings as well earlier, about people that, you know, the Dock brought in and Sexton brought in and Franco Farrell, etc., etc. Peter Davenport, kind of a bit like a Gary Birtles type of signing.
Yes, from the same club as well. But it was falling apart, and the newspapers kind of reflected that. There was even speculation about some bloke called Ferguson at Aberdeen, wherever that is.
This has been Barclay and Barton on Manchester United for another week. You can also download and subscribe to the podcast version of this very show by visiting lovesportradio.com. We'll be back next Saturday, same time, 10 p.m. We'll see you then.
This is Love Sport.